You're listening to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast with Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths.
Inside the Fox 59 CBS 4 podcast studio, welcome to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast. Alongside Mike Chappell and Matt Adams, I'm Dave Griffiths. So glad to have you along as the most expected single thing in the Colts offseason has come to pass. We told you it would happen. It has happened. The Colts have extended the non-exclusive franchise tag to wide receiver Michael Pittman Jr. Of course, we'll talk about plenty more as we are just 1 week away from free agency beginning here in the NFL, and we're out of the combine. So many great performances here on the turf at Lucas Oil Stadium last week that I'll certainly get into in a little bit. But the overarching topic that we have to discuss has to be Michael Pittman, at least to start off, because it is the most timely of stories here, as the Colts have given him that offer, like I said, $21.8 million for 1 year. Explained it a little bit, and you did online, fox59.com, cbs4indy.com, about all that that entails. But as Chris Ballard told us at the NFL Combine, Michael Pittman Jr., for all intents and purposes, is going to be a Colt this fall. This is the first step toward keeping him there.
Yeah, and I won't be shocked, as a lot of us won't be, if they get a long-term deal done. You know, from what everything that we've heard is they were talking Tuesday, and they were and if you're talking Tuesday, that means you were at least in the same ballpark, which is encouraging. But all along, Michael Pittman told us in January he wants to see what's out there. He says, "I owe it to myself." He said the best fit. Well, he's talking money. Is what he's talking.
The best, the most cramped fit to your pocketbook.
Correct.
What makes it expand as much as
that? That's fine. I mean, some people say, "Oh, it's being selfish." No, it's been.
No, that's fine.
You're looking after yourself. And I just wonder, I just sort of think he's not going to see what he wants to see. You know, and again, he can negotiate with 31 teams. He can only sign one offer sheet. It's not like you can talk to one team. You can talk to everybody and then really get serious on a deal with one team, an offer sheet. I can see a team offer Pitt $24-25 million. I really can, because that's what the market does. But I just can't see a team being willing to give up two first-round draft picks.
And that's the stumbling block, Matt, in anybody's path. If any other team wants Michael Pittman Jr., which I'm sure there might even be 31 other NFL teams that want Michael Pittman Jr., even to $23, $24 million, there probably would be 15. At least half of them would be willing to sign a receiver at that caliber, at that rate. To give up two first-round draft picks is something that we don't often see in the NFL. So there's no need for Colts fans to be any sort of worried that he could go out, I don't think, and find a suitable team and find a suitor to offer him a deal. Just because, A, it doesn't happen, and B, we didn't see it last year for Lamar Jackson. C, it doesn't happen. And I know I said it doesn't happen twice, but that's how adamant and that's how obvious I really think this issue is as it plays forward for the Colts right now.
Yeah, you'd have to be convinced that the guy is a foundational or generational player in order to
generational,
get those, in order to give up those two first-round draft picks. And it could also be Pittman and his agent just kind of see how overheated the wide receiver market gets once they hit free agency, because maybe they think they can, you know, bump that number up a couple million dollars or something along those lines from what they can get from the Colts.
And the Colts have...
With a very strong receiver draft.
Yes.
Which is going to play into it. It just is. Would you rather... You know, I always would rather have the young veteran. We were talking before air about DeForest Buckner. They gave up a first-round pick. I think we looked back, it was 13 or 14. As opposed to a rookie that you don't know about. Well, I'll take the veteran guy. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking two first-round draft picks, that's different. And, again, I think Pitt's a quality player. He's everything. We've beaten this. He's everything you want. He's the horseshoe guy. And he's going to play for at least 21-8. I think they get a deal done. Deadlines spur actions is just what I always fall back to. The deadline's going to be mid-June or mid-July, whatever the date will be, to when you can get a long-term deal done. And it just behooves both sides, because if you don't do it, then you're back here next year.
Right.
And the franchise number is going to be 20. It's going to be $23 million or so. So it works for both sides. The cap number, we always get hung up on cap number and cap space. They can make the cap sing if they want to. So, but it's just for the long term, viability for everybody. It makes sense. Jonathan Taylor, it makes sense to get something done, and then you move on to your next biggest priority.
And with Michael Pittman, he's always maintained that he wants to go out, like you said, and kind of test the waters and see what's out there. He owes it to himself. So that lends me to believe, at least, that he might wait to sign a deal, even if they're close, like you said, from your perspective, or from what you heard, or from what we had kind of gleaned, that they were even talking on Tuesday leading up to the final hours of that franchise tag. But Pitt, being a guy who has told us multiple times, and I earnestly believe him, that he wants to see what's out there. He wants to treat himself as properly as possible. That it'll probably be until, from my perspective, I think I wouldn't be surprised if it goes into free agency, obviously, in a week or two, until he signs anything for sure with the Colts, because he might want to see what other receivers are getting out there, too. And we've seen one shoe drop in that instance with Mike Evans signing back with Tampa Bay. He had the 30 or 31 years old Mike Evans signed a 2-year contract with the Bucs worth $52 million and $35 million guaranteed.
One thing about that deal is $11 million is incentives.
Yeah.
So it's really 2 years, 41, but the incentives are really easy to get.
And he hits these incentives every year.
Oh, that, right.
Yeah.
So it's basically
about stay healthy and he'll be fine.
Barring an injury or something.
So that's why whenever we throw numbers out right away, 2 years, $52 million, you need to see how it's structured, because a lot of it is incentives. Some of these are per game, you know, bonuses, active roster and all that stuff. But that's why I'm sure Pittman would have preferred to see Evans come in a little bit heftier than that.
Meatier.
Although again, I've always thought that the thing that's really going to drive Pitt, that should drive Pitt, is the guaranteed money. Get what you get. We're seeing players get dumped now, veteran guys being dumped, and the money that they were that was on the back end of their contract is gone.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not, you know, if it's not guaranteed, you don't get it. And that's one thing. That's why anyone who says a player, in this case Pittman, is being selfish, yes, because when you have the leverage, you have to use it. And I think Pittman has more leverage in this situation than the Colts do, just because. We expected this. You know, a long-term deal would have been nice, a lot better. I think it still could and should get done. But, and again, the franchise tag, it's a bridge. It buys you time, because without the franchise tag or the transition tag, one player was transitioned. I don't know who it was.
It was Duggar from New
right,
England.
Right. And the problem with the transition tag is you can match the offer, but you get no compensation. So you're letting the other team work out the contract. So it buys you time. Without the franchise tag, Pitt's a free agent come March 13th, and that would have been Armageddon for this franchise.
Yeah, so that's not happening, which is nice. No Armageddon in the immediate future, at least.
That's always a good thing.
Yes, exactly.
In whatever line of work you're in, no Armageddon.
Mm-hmm. And Pittman will be here at some point. Depends on, again, if he stays on the franchise tag and he doesn't sign it until mid-July or whatever it is. Or
Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs last year.
He could not be here for the entire offseason, which
that
is...
That would not be a good thing.
That's not Armageddon, but that's certainly not utopia either, at the other side of the coin. So
not very helpful for the development of your young
quarterback. And we talked to Shane Steichen, and he talked about the importance of having a player like Pittman with the reliability and the productivity. He's out there every day. You know what you're going to get. I likened it to 2012 when the Colts re-signed Reggie Wayne for Andrew Luck. It was vital to have that young quarterback have a guy to who he could depend on. And Luck had the great rookie year, and Reggie had one of his best years.
Mm-hmm. And that mattered to have him there alongside Andrew Luck for sure. So that's the deal right now with Michael Pittman Jr. He has been offered that deal, and he'll go and look and see if there are any nibbles out there, which none of us really anticipate there would be. And Chap, even from another team's perspective, if Pitt goes up to them, and they could say anything to him, really. Like, yeah, we might sign you for 4 years, $110 million, but we're not giving up two first-round picks for you. And if you're Pitt, like, if you're them, you can say whatever you want because you know you're not going to give up the two first-round picks. Like, I don't know how reliable any information Pitt would get from another team. I guess it's always in the interest of teams to be honest with agents, you know, just because you deal with them often.
You'll deal with them next year as well.
Exactly. So and agents represent, the big agents represent a lot of different players. So in that sense, maybe Michael Pittman gets a decent idea of what he's worth to other teams if his agent has really good working relationships with other owners. They could say, yeah, we'd give you this. But if it's not coming down to brass tacks at the end of the day, if you're not actually making an offer, which, like we've said, nobody's really going to, I don't know. Like you can't be 100% certain about your value out there. Obviously, Pittman's value is significant out there, but I don't think he's going to get the perfect, obvious, fair, 100% concrete idea of what his value is to other teams just because of the two first-round picks stumbling.
Well, again, I keep coming back to the fact that it's, you know, that someone mentioned one of the draft guys that he's got like, what, 14, is it 14 or 17 receivers with second-round, with first or second-round grades. So you can get, what was Pacua? Fifth?
Yep.
So you can get those guys. Now, I don't want to, I think you're crazy to think you can find your guy in the fifth round. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, you don't plan for
no,
that.
No, if you plan on that, then you're not a GM for very long.
If they thought that Puka Nacua was going to be what he was, they would have taken him in the first round.
Tom Brady. Yeah. If you thought he was that good, you take him in, okay, I don't know, third round? So, yeah, it's we'll see. And, again, it's all about timing. And on one hand, it was great timing for Pitt because he had his best career year. You've got the young quarterback, and let's just take him off the roster. What have you got in the receiver room? Not much. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you got Alec Pierce, you got Josh Downs, and, you know, then what?
Who both do a couple good things.
Right.
But I'm not throwing them out as garbage, but I'm not putting them up as a better than average wide receiver room in the NFL either.
So his value, along with what he brings to the team, is there's no, as we've talked, there's no plan B to be without him. And again, then you get the receiver draft. So, we've talked about it. He wants to see what's out there. He should see what's out there, but I don't think it's going to be what he thinks he should get.
Just
because of all the things we've talked about.
So here are the other players around the NFL who were tagged: Josh Allen, not that Josh Allen, but the other Josh Allen, the linebacker,
who's a pretty good Josh Allen as well.
Yes, and whenever he's playing Josh Allen, he usually plays pretty well. The linebacker for the Jacksonville Jaguars, also Brian Burns for the Carolina Panthers, Kyle Duggar, the safety from New England, which he was given the transition tag, which we explained that a little bit. And then everyone else got the non-exclusive franchise tag, which was T. Higgins, was the first one to get it last week from Cincinnati. Jalen Johnson, the DB from Chicago. Justin Matabike, defensive tackle for the Ravens.
I'm glad you had to pronounce it. I couldn't do it.
L'Jarius Sneed, cornerback for Kansas City. Antoine Winfield Jr., the safety from Tampa Bay. And today there is a report from a USA Today sports reporter that L'Jarius Sneed has been in contact with several different teams and several teams are interested in him. He's been given permission by the Chiefs to seek a trade specifically. So they have the franchise tag on him right now so that he can't go to free agency. But it's still very much within the realm of possibility for all these players. Not like you'll throw in Michael Pittman Jr. there, even though that's not really an avenue the Colts and him are exploring, this avenue. But with Sneed, it appears like the Chiefs are really giving him the option to earnestly seek a trade. It would be a similar situation to the DeForest Buckner situation that the Colts got a couple years ago.
Buck wasn't franchised, but similar.
No, exactly. Similar. Yes. So he wants to go out and seek a trade. He wants to go elsewhere, and the Chiefs are basically letting him do that, but they're not just letting him hit free agency. They want something in return. They're not going to get two first-round picks.
That's what the trade would do. You're basically doing the contract, and then once you do that, it's going to be, okay, what's compensation?
Exactly. So when the Colts traded for DeForest Buckner, they gave their first-round pick to the 49ers, and they signed Buckner to a long-term extension.
4 years, $80 million.
So that's what would happen here in the Sneed situation, that there would be compensation worked out between the Chiefs and whichever team is offering for Sneed, and then they would sign Sneed to a long-term extension. He would not play under a franchise tag, obviously, or 1 year, or 14 or 15, whatever the number is for cornerbacks, $1 million. But
it's 19,
$19 million. Yeah, even more than that. So there you go.
So that's again. That's I was looking. The top is 19.8. The top eight quarterback or corners make 19.5. The leader is Jair Alexander at 21. So if you're going to make a trade and an extension with Snead, it's going to be 20. It's going to be Buckner money.
Right.
It just will be. Whatever you'd give up for him, the Colts have the with the 15th pick.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that are mocking a corner to the Colts. It's sort of what they. This is back in 2020.
Yep.
Would you rather have that proven veteran at a monster contract, or you know one of these top three or four corners? You're going to pay for it, but wouldn't you rather have a guy that has done it? He's still not quite to his prime. If you're going to pay for it, but I would probably prefer that.
Yeah, the back to 2020 when they gave up the pick for DeForest Buckner, the guy that was kind of hovering around that pick for the Colts was Javon Kinlaw, the defensive tackle out of South Carolina. And who's Javon Kinlaw now? Like he's a fine player, but he's not a pro.
Did the Niners take him?
I think they did.
Didn't
yes.
they reload?
Exactly. Yes, they took him. So they basically got their guy to replace.
Well, that's our argument. Would yes. you rather have? You can't take the money out of the equation because that's what it is. Yeah. Would you rather have that guy or would you rather have the young guy? No, you want the guy who, and Buck has exceeded. He probably has exceeded expectations here.
I think
here.
So, yeah. I think he's at least matched, if not exceed. He's right. not underperformed.
And
sure.
and there's every chance that in the next few months he gets an extension.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think if you could do that and be guaranteed, which you can't be, that's what you're going to get. I would take that first-round pick and do that, and unless it's a top-five pick and you need, you know, the quarterback or whatever. It makes sense.
Right. So, and would it be a first-round pick that you'd have to give up for Snead? And if,
don't you think it would?
I would think so.
Snead is one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL, especially in zone coverage. I was looking at some stats. He only gave up like 4 yards per catch in playing zone coverage this year and was one of the best cornerbacks graded for through Pro Football Focus or something.
He's 27.
There you go. He's 27 years old too.
6'1", 193. Man,
that's right about yeah. What Ballard likes, 6'1" plus. Like if he's 6 foot or below, that makes me like corner. I don't know about
anymore.
That. Exactly. Like he had to be beaten into submission to get Kenny Moore on the roster, and now he probably won't let him go. Well, we'll see about that. This
and then all of a
period.
Sudden your corner room we're projecting. But then it's Snead and then Juju Brents, which
mm-hmm.
it's hard to project Juju based on his rookie year because of
he just hurt so
injuries.
Much, yeah.
And then all of a sudden Jalen Jones is your third outside corner, and Kenny Moore, if you can get him back, which I think they will, all of a sudden that's secondary. The cornerback room, safety is another issue. Cornerback room is in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. Looks a lot better. And you're also bringing back Dallas Flowers, too. Who knows what he's going to be. So if you just get the one top-end guy, everything else
everybody can play. Everybody can get back on the rung they belonged on.
And that's the thing. You're not saying, hey, can this number two be a number one? Can this number three be a number two? Can a seventh-round pick, Jalen Jones,
no,
be
we've
everyday
got we've
guy?
Got Stephon Gilmore. We know he's the one.
Right.
And we saw the difference that he made 2 years ago.
One bit of news that I do want to get to as well, that is the charges against Indianapolis Colts tight end Andrew Ogletree in Hendricks County were dismissed, according to court documents filed on Tuesday. They were dismissed with prejudice, which means...
Our news side does a great job with that.
They do. They do a very good job, Matt and all the people.
I had nothing to do with this one, but we appreciate the nice comments.
Of course. To be dismissed with prejudice means that they can't bring the same charges back in the same court, the same defendant. And the motion to dismiss basically said, hang on, let me find the exact quote here. It said that the prosecutor's office, and I remember talking about this obviously here months ago. We were saying that when we looked at the document called
probable cause.
That's right, the probable cause affidavit. That it didn't look good. Like it looked nasty. There were some nasty details in there. But here's the. Here's what's coming out this week. The prosecutor's office said that subsequent interviews with all the parties involved revealed information and evidence not provided to law enforcement
on the night
of the alleged incident.
Right.
Then the evidence is insufficient to prosecute this case. So that's, again, why whenever it comes to legal issues like this, it's foolhardy to try to project the end of things rather than to look at the information that's at hand. We could obviously say at the time that it didn't look good. The probable cause didn't look good. But the first man to plead his case seems right until someone comes to examine him. And that's what the last weeks and months were. Someone else coming to examine the evidence. And the prosecutor's office determining we can't file any criminal charges here. So what we've seen in the past in the NFL is even though there are no criminal charges filed,
he's still on the commissioner's list.
Yes, there could still be discipline. And he is on the commissioner's list. We saw that with, to take the biggest example recently, the Deshaun Watson scenario. Not criminally charged with anything, but was subsequently punished by the NFL. Because even though what he did was deemed not to be criminal, the NFL deemed it to be something that was...
Something happened.
Yeah, something happened that was against their personal conduct policy. So that still has to be determined by the NFL. Ogletree still finds himself on the commissioner's exempt list, so he's not on the Colts roster. So we'll have to just kind of keep our ears to the ground to see where and when the NFL comes down, if any sort of punishment that they deliver on Drew Ogletree from their own investigation to the events.
And I think the Colts will follow a lead from the NFL. And boy, my gut says if there's discipline, then the Colts will take it a step further and release him. It's just sort of in my head. If there's no discipline by the league, I don't know what the Colts do. Again, something happened between Drew and the woman. We're not going to get into...
Right. We should.
He said, but something happened, and will the Colts tolerate something happening? I don't know. I don't know. That's their business. So, no, but it was on the main level, good for Drew. That's he can has a chance to move forward.
Yes, he takes a step forward, and we'll see what the next step forward is, and that's where we stop this conversation because we don't know what the
next step
forward is
going to be. Because anything else is just
exactly.
Yeah,
the Colts signed center Jack Anderson to a contract extension,
which is why they couldn't get Pittman done. You know that?
That's right. Exactly. They were really working on Anderson. they gave him all the time.
This reminded me so much because the timing was very similar when the Broncos traded for Russell Wilson a couple years ago. Was the same day the Colts announced the signing of Tony Brown.
Yes.
And it seems so anticlimactic for Colts fans who were, at that point, you know, the Colts desperate for a quarterback. We got to do something. And it was, oh, we've signed Tony Brown.
You know what reminded me of something completely different was last fall when the Colts signed Luke Rhodes to an extension and Jonathan Taylor wasn't getting any extension.
Breaking extension coming.
Yes.
Really?
Luke Rhodes. Hold on a second. Wait.
Great for Luke, not so much for...
Exactly.
Jonathan Taylor.
Luke Rhodes, an all-pro performer. Jack Anderson just has appeared in 15 games across a stint with several teams in the league. Was a seventh-round pick a while ago. Not a while ago, but a little while ago.
2021.
Exactly. Yeah, not a while. That's a little bit too much. Only played one game last season here in Indianapolis, but now signed to an extension with the team, so he'll be back next year. Shane Steichen did give his availability this week after he is back.
He talked 15 minutes like Matt. It was a 15-minute
right?
interview.
That's forever. I mean, I know Jim Irsay, that's like one question. You ask Jim Irsay, and it's 15 minutes. But for Shane Steichen, 15 minutes is, my goodness, he must have felt tremendous. He had his vitamin C. He took his zinc. He was 100% back from whatever ailed him during Combine week. So he spoke plenty highly of Pitt, wants him to be a Colt. Of course, this was Tuesday when we spoke to him. So it was before Pitt had officially been offered the non-exclusive franchise tag. And he basically said he wasn't going to get into it too much. But Chap, you were on the call with Shane Steichen. What else stuck out to you from the oodles of content we got the 15 minutes with the Colts head coach?
Yeah, in the non-Pitt category, ask him about an update on Anthony Richardson. And from what Steichen said, Richardson's bouncing back and forth between Indy and Jacksonville in his rehab. He's throwing, as remember Richardson put out three weeks ago, whatever it was, early last month.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just really in – you can see the eyes light up a little bit whenever you talk about pairing – getting Richardson in the building from the start knowing he's your guy. Keep in mind, they didn't know that he was going to be the guy – really, until they named it in training camp. They
had the idea.
They had the idea.
But it wasn't for sure.
Right.
Like if they knew it for sure, he would have gotten all the reps
right.
earlier.
Right. And he didn't. For the first 2 weeks or whatever, he didn't. So you've got your guy. You've got your guy. And then he's got Jonathan Taylor. Shane Steichen really, he had more in the offseason of Richardson than he did Taylor. He didn't have Taylor at all. Until whatever it was, the start of the season because of contract, rehab, whatever you want to call it. And keep in mind that Richardson and JT played one play together. One.
Who knows?
So to have the to be able to build with Pittman and then with Richardson and with Taylor and then whoever else you add, you can see it in his eyes what they can do. And then was one thing that's also interesting, and I asked him about this, is last year when he got in here, combine draft, his role really, find us a quarterback. You know, here's your, I said, did they tell you that here's your office now, get us a quarterback? And he sort of laughed, and it was. Now he has the chance to be more hands-on, I guess, in the roster. In the first round pick, is it a corner? Is it a wide receiver? Is it a tight end? And all the way down, it's just not it's not quarterback-driven. And I think he'll be a lot more comfortable to not be trying to form his staff and to learn his way around the building this year. He knows that. So he'll be more, I guess, hands-on. And probably also, and we sort of talked to him about this. We talked about it. I think there's going to be a Shane Steichen effect in free agency. I think he's going to be more, want them to be a little more aggressive, which it doesn't take a lot to be a little more aggressive for the Colts. But I think they believe they've got a lot of foundational pieces in place, quarterback, receiver, head coach, some pretty good defensive linemen. And I think they internally they should believe they're a lot closer to being very, very relevant. So maybe that makes you be more aggressive in free agency.
Anything that can help your young quarterback,
exactly.
Mac. I was saying, like Chap said, here's your office, now get us a quarterback. Well, you got the quarterback. Now fill the rest of the room.
Right.
Like make it as easy for him as possible, right?
I really enjoyed his answer to that because you saw a little bit of a smile from some Shane Steichen.
It's the one smile we get a year.
Yeah, exactly. He was just like, yep, that was pretty much how it was. Here's your office, now get a quarterback. But yeah, he's got to be super excited, especially they'll bring Pitt back. They'll get him working with Richardson, and then they'll have JT healthy, as he kind of mentioned at the end of his
One other thing he mentioned was really curious is – and we'll get to the free agents here briefly. Gardner Minshew will be a free agent, barring them re-signing him. And he was asked about what does he prefer in a backup. Is it, you know, do you look maybe to find a guy more in line with Richardson's skill set? So then if and when he goes down, you're not changing things or you're not having a pocket guy have to adapt his game. And he said, yeah, that's not too bad. But he also said, you know, and Ballard mentioned the same thing. You want a guy that can come in and win. Because Steichen, which Minshew did. Because like Steichen said, your backup quarterback, once the season gets going, does not take reps with the first team. Not a few. He takes none.
Zero.
He runs the scout team. So he's not running your offense.
Right. He's running everyone else's offense.
Right. Which is good for him. But he's not, you know, that's why it's important in training camp, which is going to be an interesting balance, is how much do you give Richardson, you know, a lot. But you have to give your backup enough that if, heaven forbid, something happens, that he knows what the heck's going on. So it'll be really curious to see, one, if they try to bring back Minshew. I'm guessing no. And if not, then who? There will be, as we've talked, there will be a backup quarterback here that people recognize by name value. It just will.
I think that they will have interest in bringing back Minshew, but Minshew will have more interest.
That's right. That's put better. Correct.
In going somewhere else. Not that he didn't like his time with the Colts, but he wants a place where he could.
He wants the better fit.
Yeah.
Which means money.
Yes. He wants more money.
There you go.
And he also wants to play. And he knows if he's going to be here, the only chance he plays is if Richardson gets hurt, which, let's be honest, from the small sample size we got, was not the most outlandish conclusion to come to. But if he goes to somewhere else like Atlanta where he could actually play, who knows? Or somewhere like Pittsburgh where he could play, who knows?
But he's gonna sign with the team probably without knowing what their answer is at quarterback.
It's going to be like last year for him. Mm-hmm. Like, right. It's going to be very similar to last year,
so,
I think.
Yeah, you know, because you know, I would think he wants to sign before the April 25th draft. So would he just mark the top three or four teams off? And then do you mark off the Raiders? Do you mark off Minnesota? Because it's a very, very robust free agent quarterback class with the Baker Mayfields and Kirk Cousins.
Yep. Russell Wilson now.
Russell Wilson. I mean, gracious. It's funny how Russell Wilson, it was really a nice message he put about thanking the city of Denver and all that.
Russell is nothing if not political.
He got like $150 million from that contract. And what's he going to count in dead money? $85
million? I think that's the right number.
35 and then 50. And what's crazy, what's going to be really fascinating, another rabbit. We tend to go down. We should call this the rabbit hole.
Yes.
But he is going to get $39 million this year. The only question is who pays him. And if I'm a team that wants Russell Wilson, why would I pay him more than
say veteran minimum?
Veteran minimum. Yep. And because unless you just don't want to stick it to Denver, but you know,
why would you not want to stick it to Dallas?
Exactly. Right. So this won't be a he's one of the rare situations where he can go to where he believes is the best fit. Because money doesn't matter, which is really odd.
The one time ever.
Right. You know, Pittman's not going to go where there's the best fit. He wants to go where there's the most money.
Right.
Not Russell Wilson. He's going to go where there's the best fit because he's getting his cash regardless.
Right. His pocketbook's going to – his fit is going to be quite –
It's pretty good when you can budget your upcoming year now knowing, well, I got $39 million.
Pretty good.
Right.
Yeah. The Colts, according to overthecap.com, have $49.3 million in cap space. That comes in after the Michael Pittman Jr. contract. Yeah, exactly. That's 21.8 off from what it was before. Takes you down from 70 down to that $49 or $50 million range. And that is the eighth most among NFL teams right now. Their effective cap, which accounts for having 51 players and rookie signings.
And the rookie pool.
Exactly. Is $45.1 million. Now, of course, that... You look at that, you're like, oh, that's a lot of money to go out and spend. But hold on, because it's going to go very quickly.
Okay, LeJarius Sneed, there's $20
million. Exactly.
I mean, you just throw that out there.
Half of it's gone. Do you want to bring back Julian Blackman? Do you want to bring back Grover Stewart?
Yes.
Do you want to bring back Kenny Moore?
Yes.
Do you want to bring back Rigo Sanchez? It's not going to be as expensive as anyone else.
He'll get $3 million,
But all of those guys will be the most expensive of all of them in there.
Cap's gone.
Yeah, cap's gone. And it's gone. Everything's gone. So you're again that goes into I've said this before and I know it's just a little bit into left field from where the consensus is, I think, from what the Colts do this offseason. That's why I've always I've said that it's not 100% that they're going to re-sign Grover Stewart. And he's just one guy in there that I think that maybe they could find someone in the first or second round to plug in there. I think that other guys provide more value. Maybe they don't re-sign Julian Blackman, but then, heck.
They need to re-sign him.
Safety there, they need to figure out what the heck they're doing. Whether it's Blackman or it's a free agent, they're not going to go into next year with just rookies at safety. They can't do it.
We saw what happened when you went with rookies at corner.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
It's not feasible to do that. So whether it's going to be Blackman or whether it's going to be trying to go out and sign Kyle Duggar, who the Patriots transition tagged, or it's going to be Condre Diggs from the Seahawks.
You're not going to pay top dollar for a corner and top dollar for a safety.
No, you're not. Absolutely not.
So pick where you want to do it.
Like, if you want to invest money somewhere, invest it in your offense where you're trying to develop your quarterback. That's kind of what leave some room over there is kind of what I'm thinking. That's why I lean toward not paying either a Grover Stewart or somebody on the defensive side of the ball to be able to give a little bit more to your offense and let them develop. Maybe take some more hits. We saw what the Colts defensive line was against the run with and without Grover. It was not good.
Not good.
I'm not here saying that you would improve that immediately, but I would rather, if I'm a fan of this team, I would rather them take some lumps defending the run and give my quarterback a better chance to succeed.
Or not getting beating over the top because your corners aren't good enough.
Exactly. Like have teams force them to drive down the field against you. Like, you look back to the 2006 Colts, and I know, this team is an aberration, the team that won the Super Bowl in terms of what they were doing on the defensive side of the ball. They gave up 173 yards per game.
375. I was there in Jacksonville.
375 in Jacksonville, specifically.
Should have been 500.
They didn't even need me in Jacksonville to lose that game. But literally, it is the worst rushing defense in the most modern era of football. I looked up the stats actually before today, and I saw that every team above them in terms of who's given up more rushing yards per season came before the year 1985, except for the 2022, so 2 years ago's Houston Texans, but they had an extra game. So they actually averaged less per game than the Colts in 2006. Literally every team that gave up more rushing yards per game, more rushing yards total, was before the year 1985. They were the worst rushing defense in a regular season in the modern era after 1985 of professional football, and they won the Super Bowl.
But that was
year.
An aberration
but it was
season.
An aberration
because one you had an offense that could often overcome it. But
right.
then oh by the way, Bob Sanders came back
exactly,
and Rob. I wish people wouldn't forget Rob Morris. He came
he
back too,
tremendous.
And he really made a difference. But Bob Sanders,
yes.
So, but don't base it on man.
And I won't. I'm not trying to
right.
base it on that.
Right, right,
yes.
right.
I'm not saying go that far to swing the pendulum that way. But what that defense was able to do was it was able to get after the quarterback. So in
Freddie
those,
and Mathers.
Exactly. Whenever, like they might give up a lot of rushing yards, but if the offense got a lead late because Peyton and Marvin and
Dallas Clark.
Yes, exactly.
They were just so loaded.
If they
on
got
offense.
A lead, then even if they had given up 150, 180 rushing yards, then after that, the team was trying to pass the ball
right.
in the past couple minutes of the game. And then you had Freddie and Mathis going everyone. Like I said, this is an aberration, so I'm not trying to base it on
right.
that. But I am trying to base it on the fact that I would rather have a pass rush focus on that than Grover Stewart in the middle solidifying the rush defense. I would rather have, on the offense, more weapons for Anthony Richardson to feel comfortable with and develop as a passer than I would a positive rush defense as well.
So. That one thing I was looking, Pro Football Focus does their free agency projections and what these players should expect. Kenny Moore, 2 years, almost $7 million a year. He signed a 4-year, $33 million extension in 19. Minshew, they project $8 million a year. He won't get that here.
No.
I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Grover Stewart, he signed a 3-year, $30 million extension in 20. They project 3 years, $11 million average. So,
yep, so
the
like
same,
$33 million a year.
Same
$33 million total, excuse me.
So, 3 years, $33 million. Julian Blackman, it's hard to project him because he's coming off his rookie deal. They're looking at 2 years, about $6 million a year. I could live with that, certainly.
I could, too. I would think I could.
And the one I don't mean to joke about, but Riggo, he signed 4 years, 11.6, which made him the top. He's still the number seven ranked punter,
mm-hmm.
pay-wise. Give him his – he won't get $12 million, but give him $3.5 million a year, and then – it's like Matt Gay. Get it done.
Yeah, call it a day.
Because it's
just one, finish it.
And I really think in the next 4 or 5 days, they'll announce that. I saw Houston. Was it Houston sign their kicker?
Yes, Kymie Fairbairn.
Right. To make him 5'3 or whatever it is. Because
mm-hmm.
that's what you do. If you
yep.
got to, then it's just, okay, I don't have to worry about kicker. I don't have to worry about punter. I don't have to worry about long snapper. Those are done. And combined, they're going to cost you $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
But they're out of your head for the next three or four years. So
we talked about kind of those primary free agents, you know, the Blackman, Stewart, Kenny Moore, Arrigo, I'd even throw up there in the top four. But after that, there's a whole bunch of guys in that secondary tier that obviously Gardner Minshew, we mentioned him, Tyquan Lewis, defensive end,
Resigning.
Zach Moss at running back, Danny Pinter at center and guard, Ronnie Harrison, who came in late and was pretty valuable when you were trying
Versatile.
To figure out what the heck you were going
to
do.
You were trying to figure out who could play where.
Exactly. Like, make him play safety. I don't know. I guess we'll throw him back there. Nothing else is working. So, like, all those are more ancillary. Those are not the ones that are going to take up the big chunks, you know, of the $49 million that's available right now. Like, you need to determine what the most important things in free agency are.
But without ignoring the depth of the roster.
Of course,
and,
yes.
And some of those guys you just mentioned, those, you know, Danny Pinter, those are the guys that, you know, last year he misses, what, all season with that foot ankle injury.
It was a leg injury, I remember that, yeah.
But until then, he had played pretty well. At center primarily. So those are the guys, you know, whenever you're in October, November, and you've got eight offensive linemen that you trust, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So don't, you know, in Ballard's normally, I think was it last year or 2 years ago, 2 years ago, their depth was really questionable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to get in that position again.
Yeah. If I could sign, just if I said the Colts can only sign one of these players and they have to look everywhere else, I think Kenny Moore would probably be my choice. Just because I think he's valuable to the cornerbacks. Everyone else is so dang young. Like, you can make a good argument for Julian Blackman, too. You can make a great argument for Grover Stewart. I've sit here and I've said that maybe they don't sign Grover Stewart, but at the same time, I can make a great argument that they should sign Grover Stewart. Like, I so So I'm just kind of trying to keep the door open to that possibility when a lot of people, I think, have closed it, like I've said. And I just
a lot of people say it's a no-brainer.
Exactly.
Well, it's really not.
Maybe not. Exactly. Maybe not.
So the reality is you can't keep everybody. So you have to make a cost analysis on money and roster depth. And it sometimes leads to some really hard choices for teams.
Yeah. And you're always looking ahead, too, because as we've talked about, perhaps next year they have to accept that they should sign Bernard Raimann to an extension,
right?
And if he's your left tackle, that's money. Mm-hmm. That's a big contract. So you're always looking ahead. But I think the really good teams are able to re-sign their own. Ballard has shown he would much prefer to re-sign his own. I've got the list at home of the even down to the Nyheim Hineses and people like that. That's Shaq and Braden Smith and all this stuff. That's what you prefer. What's going to be interesting is how they look at, again, a LeJarius Sneed. Would you rather pay Sneed, as good as he is, $20 million a year, or would you rather pay two mid-level or high mid-level guys $10 million a year each, a receiver? I think you're going to get a good receiver, a veteran receiver, for, I don't know, $8 to $10 million,
mm-hmm.
which has almost been the ceiling of what Ballard has paid for a veteran receiver, and whether you can get another pass rusher or a tackle if you let Grover Stewart go. So would you rather pay one guy that much when he is the better player, or get two pretty good players for the same price? I don't know.
And it seems like the Colts have gotten their fair share of mid-level veteran free agents. That is and how they tend to spend their money.
And they got a lot of those guys. I saw JJ with Colts.com mention that they got a lot of their work done early last year. In the first week, Samson
Ebukam.
I always butcher his name.
It's a tough one, man.
But they got him done early at a really, really good price. And back in the day, I thought they got Jamal Sherrod done early. I thought they got Denico Autry done early. So if you can get these guys who you can really see that they're almost ready to emerge, and so you get them at a good price, but not break the bank price. Like we're gonna March 13th, it's gonna be ridiculous. The numbers that come out of there,
mm-hmm.
because they always are,
and because teams got $30 million
exactly.
increase to the
and,
cap,
and a lot of them just can't wait to spend it.
Yep, exactly. They're out there, and they're the worst thing you could be on the first day of free agency is desperate.
Say, especially right. those teams with all the dead cap money that
oh
thought they
gosh.
Were not going to have much to spend.
Yeah,
they're
like, right.
oh, now
geez,
we got some.
Hey, yeah. So I wanted to bring up a couple numbers on this podcast as we draw closer to the close. But with the NFL Combine that just finished up this week, of course, plenty of players were on the turf at Lucas Oil Stadium giving a
Raz.
Yes, Raz.
I looked up some of these today, too.
What's it mean again?
Relative athletic score
okay.
is what it stands for. Relative athletic score. And if you go to ras.football online, you can see the website, which is you can if you figure it out. I think it's a good tool. It's not the most intuitive website to use, and that's putting it delicately. But you can find a lot of things that you're looking for
so
there.
Be prepared to hit the refresh button once or twice.
Yeah,
too.
Like, oh, what am I doing here? So anyway, just from the players who performed at the Combine this past week, relative athletic score, like we said
you
last week.
I'm impressed you do homework.
Right? There it is right there. There it is. You can hear it back home on the podcast.
Actual real
papers. Yes, exactly. No care for the environment, printing out things right here. But some of the top relative athletic scores, there was a tight end there in Theo Johnson out of Penn State who got a 999 out of 10 at relative athletic score. Again, describing this last week we did on the podcast, I'd go back and listen to it if you didn't catch it all. But in general, it's on a 0 to 10 score. 10 is the best. Most athletic prospect all time based on this metric, and zero would be the worst athletic prospect of all time. When you combine height, weight, you combine speed from the 40-yard dash, your shuttle drills, your bench press for power and explosion, vert, broad jump, all that stuff is combined into one score. The Colts actually have a couple players who are 10s, are the most athletic players ever tested. Anthony Richardson is one of them. Jelani Woods is another one. They are 10s. They are the most athletic prospects at least dating back to like 1987 or something.
Yeah,
where this
I think
begins,
it's 87 is when they start tracking it.
That were ever tested based on this metric and how things come together. And then Juju Brents was a 999, which is basically the second most athletic prospect ever tested. So a couple players, like I said, Theo Johnson, a tight end out of Penn State, got a 999. How about Indy's own, well, Avon's own, I should say, Isaac Garendo, the running back out of Louisville via Wisconsin before that, who was a 998, and he basically got this because he's a big guy, like 6'1 running back, who's 221 pounds, big dude, but ran in the 4.3s, a 4.33, just shouldn't be able to do that.
No, that's wrong.
He's the guy that Jonathan Taylor, actually, back in the 2021 season, called out when we were talking about his speed and his breakaway speed.
Yes.
Because he knew him from his time at Wisconsin. He said that Isaac Garendo one time hit like 25 miles per hour. And he was trying like heck, Taylor was, to match that. And he never could quite get there to 25. He's been in the 24s a couple times, but never hit 25 miles per hour. He called out Isaac Garendo back then as a guy who hit 25, and he was trying to reach that. Well, Garendo opened some eyes at the combine. I wouldn't be surprised. He improved his stock. For all the stories that can come out about the combine that say, hey, Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't working out. Hey, Caleb Williams isn't working out. Well, is this really worthwhile? Players improve their stock at the combine, or at least get coaches and GMs and scouts to go back and look at the tape again. It matters 100%. It's not going anywhere. It is valuable. This stuff matters, and it brings in everybody. Like, so many GMs and coaches and all that are there. They're watching this. They're not doing it because they want to come to Indianapolis in late February and hang out.
Like, 70 degrees a couple of days.
It was, yeah. How about that? But then it's also like snowy and nasty.
Oh, you get the whole bag.
Exactly. Like, they're doing it because this is valuable. And that's to say, I liked Isaac Garendo's performance. You look at a wide receiver like Adonai Mitchell out of Texas, who also was a 9.98. He ran a 4.3, 4.40. I'm not going to get into all the numbers because I think that's too much in the weeds. But there are several players I thought that really stood out. And if you look at, like we said last week again on this podcast, that the Colts' last two drafts under Chris Ballard were two of the top 10 or 12 relative athletic scores in terms of drafts, average relative athletic scores for their players that they've taken back to 1987, whenever this started. Like, you have to understand RIS if you want to know where Chris Ballard is going.
And they've explained that to us.
Right, they have.
They value athleticism.
Very much so. So you look at guys like that. I tweeted out something from Brian Thomas Jr., the wide receiver out of LSU, the second wide receiver out of LSU. Everybody has Malik Nabers and, of course, Marvin Harrison Jr.
A few people have pushed Nabers ahead of him.
Right, they have. And Rome Odunze is the top three. But if Brian Thomas Jr. is available to the Colts like in the middle of that first round, I think that's really dadgum tempting based on the numbers he put up, based on scoring, 16, 17 touchdowns last year, leading the Division I in touchdowns.
Which is more than Michael Pittman's had in 4 years.
In his career, man. Come on. Like, it was like the numbers he put up were great. The stats he put up were great. There were a bunch of players that I thought were really intriguing. And then you look at a bunch of defensive ends that felt pretty good in the first round. I mean, it's a stat geek's it's their dream right here to the combine, and Chris Ballard is very much in part a stat geek, and like Chap said, Matt, really matters to him. So you've been on there, and it's valuable to a Colts fan who wants to take the next step really into understanding what Chris Ballard is looking for, to head to RAS.football and try to explore that a little bit.
Well, we talked a little bit about some of the mock drafts and some of the corners, and so there were like four or five different corners that had been mentioned in the mock drafts, and it looked to me like the Toledo kid, Quinlan
Mitchell. Yep.
He was one of the higher performers there on RAS.
Yep. So he had like a 9.84.
Yeah,
Mitchell did, and yes, so he was one of the top performers. So you look at that; that's intriguing. He is just 6 foot though. So at the same
shorter.
So you look at everything when it comes to the. You don't just say, "Oh, here's the score; the Colts are going to take them." Although, in that sense, and he also had a really good Senior Bowl, which Chris Ballard has shown in the past how valuable he thinks the Senior Bowl is, putting them up against the best competition out there.
So when you look at some of those different guys, and I think Wiggins tested fairly well for USC.
And for some other players like Nate Wiggins from Clemson.
Clemson.
Yeah, he ran like a 4.23, 40, and then got hurt. So he couldn't do the rest of the rest of the drills. So basically, he didn't get an RIS score. So if you want to go look at this list, it's not a fully complete list. Because you're not going to see Marvin
Brock
Harrison
Bowers
Jr.
Didn't
on there.
Didn't do any drills, so that he has no RIS score.
Right. So this is not a complete list. It's just a tool out there. if you want to get into it. And Wiggins would be one that I think is really intriguing because he is a 6'1", 6'2 guy.
He's got the size and the speed.
Right. So. If they want to keep investing in young cornerbacks, just go all in. Say, you think our cornerback room is too young? Well, take this. We're going to get more young guys.
And they had like 6 or 7 wide receivers that were 9.7 or above. So you've got a really nice – yes, you've got your top line guys, your Marvin Harrison Juniors and so forth, but you've got some other guys that are definitely first-round worthy that are going to fit that athletic profile that you want.
That's insanely athletic receivers in this draft, Chap. It's not just guys that are at the tip top in terms of kind of more polished guys like the top three we mentioned coming out of college that we've seen in a while, but there's a lot of guys with some extreme potential that if given the right coaching and the right scheme, it's not just those top three. There could be a slew of really, really good wide receivers coming out of this draft.
Yeah, that's why, you know, maybe the Colts believe that it's that deep and they can get a guy at 45 or 46, whatever
46,
they are
I
in
believe
round
they
two.
Are.
And then you say, Reggie, here, make this guy a first-round pick or maximize what we've got. And the whole thing about the Raz is you've got to make sure that the athleticism meshes with how did he play. How did he play in 3 or 4 years at wherever? So, but they, you know, most of the guys at the combine, they get invited because they were pretty good, you know, from all the schools. It's seldom. I even got the time or the interest to do the research. You know, how many guys get drafted each year that didn't have a combine invite? Now, guys get a chance to make rosters because you've got to fill out your training camp schedule or roster. But how many guys did not get, you know, I think this year was 321 players were invited, and how many are drafted?
250-260-ish, right around
256-ish,
there.
256-ish. Yeah, it's in the CBA, whatever it is.
Depends on,
but it,
compensatory
it's,
picks,
it's,
right.
Yes, it's so rare for a player to just be overlooked because there are eyes everywhere. The Colts have a zillion scouts, and they will be at every workout. They just will be. So yeah, but again, the guy has to have functional ability, not just again. Mm-hmm. You could put together a 4x100 team and blow people away, but we've seen really, really fast. Well, who was the mid round draft pick? The
Darius Hayward Bay was pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of them Philip Dorsett was really fast.
Yeah.
But who was the corner they drafted last year that was cut? Darius Rush.
Yeah.
Which he had all, you know.
Yep. He was a 9'8 or a 9'9
yeah,
right around
really,
that
really
range.
Big.
So yep. So you got, you just can't. I mean, it is, these guys aren't lazy. You're just not going to look at Raz, but that's why, again, by and large, these guys have had good drafts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've had their, I don't know if they call them blind spots or whatever that they haven't hit on. But that, like you said, that's if you've got two players that are neck and neck, that's not a bad tiebreaker as the Raz, if it's significant.
It really matters in free agency, too, because I looked at last year's free agency class, the guys they brought in. Samson Ebukam was a 9'8 when he was tested coming out of Eastern Washington.
One of Ballard's best signings. Mm-hmm.
Taven Bryan, who will not come back next year, who was not one of his best signings, was a 9'9"1.
They tried to replace Grover with him, and
that didn't work out. Brashad Perriman, who they signed in camp last year, was a 9'9"5 as a wide receiver. He was a first-round pick a couple, like 9, 10 years ago. So whenever Chris Ballard is looking for free agency, that stuff matters too. It's not just this only matters.
Wonder what Kenny Moore was.
Kenny Moore didn't get a score. I don't think he was ever tested. Maybe he didn't do like bench reps or something, or he didn't do all the reps that are needed out of Valdosta State.
Again, we keep coming back to Kenny Moore being that aberration guy.
And height and weight matter for RAS score. So he would have been, that would have been
getting
some real low numbers.
I bet he would have been pretty low. And then he says, take your RAS.
I have two players on the Colts' current roster who were very low. Who do you think the two lowest players on the Colts' current roster are in terms of RAS score? Well, actually, one of them is going to be a free agent, and one of them is not going to be a free
agent.
Braden
Smith.
No, not Braden Smith. This will be our last thing we discuss on this Colts Blue Zone podcast.
Is going to be a free agent?
Can you predict one player is going to be a free agent? And it's not a punter. Punters don't get RAS scores, so don't give me that. But the one player who had the lowest RAS score on the Colts roster and the one who had the second lowest. No, Tyquan actually had a pretty good one.
Okay,
surprisingly.
But see, I'm just throwing darts now.
So. Rodney Thomas was another really good score. Actually,
God, you did your homework.
The lowest RAS score on the Colts, Zach Moss.
okay.
out of Utah, yeah. running back, a 281
Oof.
Out of 10. And you would never believe this guy who had a 395, DeForest Buckner.
Oh, my.
A 395 RAS score because his speed and his like three cone and shuttle drills were so bad. They completely tanked.
I bet you get like a three if you just show up.
Right.
Especially if you're 6'7",
it's like your
SATs. Don't you get like, your name.
You get like 200 if you get. If mm-hmm.
A 295. Like, it shows you that this
is
a tool.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Again, this is a tool. It is not the end all be all, but it does matter for the Colts as they're looking at players. And of course, with Buckner, I mean, he came into the league and he proved that he was entirely better than a 395. Relative athletic score, probably because he improved in some of those aspects, and also his size and his strength proved to be something.
I wonder how prevalent Raz was as a tool back then.
Probably not as much as it is now, but anyway, and he was a top 10 overall pick.
I never would have guessed that.
Exactly. Like I said, that's why I brought it up, because I knew you'd never get it.
It's not a perfect
I knew you'd never get it.
It's not a perfect measurement, is Dave's point.
Yes, the only perfect measurement is what we have to say here on the Colts Blue Zone podcast.
Guaranteed money.
Exactly.
Guaranteed money.
That's the one thing
right.
Above all else. So we do appreciate listening to this Colts Blue Zone podcast. Next week, it will be March 13th, 14th, whenever we drop, and that'll be right around the start of free agency. So we are just getting started. In this offseason, man, it's going to be really exciting moving forward. You can follow
these guys will be active.
Very much so.
I believe that. And by this time next week, they, in my mind, they will have re-signed two or three or four guys. They won't let these guys, the guys they want back, they do not want them to get in the open market.
When you find out, it'll be by at mchapel51 on Twitter, at @DaveG_sports on Twitter, at Statamatty on Twitter. Together we are at Colts Blue Zone. Read all of Mike Chappell's work online at fox59.com, cbs4indy.com, and we'll see you next week on the Colts Blue Zone podcast.